Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Recycle by Eurosport, a retrospective series on the most compelling, the most controversial, and the most extraordinary riders and races in cycling history. Written by Felix Lowe and narrated by me, Graham Wilgos. Last time out, we look back on the year the legendary Eddy Merckx broke rival Luis Acaña by almost winning two stages in one day during the 1972 Tour de France. In this edition of Recycle, we're riding with the first South American to win a Grand Tour, Colombia's Luis Lucho Herrera, and the stories of race-fixing, kidnapping and saddle sores around his 1987 Vuelta a España title. Known as El Jardinerito, the Little Gardener, green-fingered Luis Herrera certainly achieved more success on his bike than he did working on a flower plantation in his native Fusagasuga. A mainstay in the distinctive red, blue, yellow and white Café de Colombia jersey during the 1980s, Lucho Herrera would rack up a total of 5 King of the Mountains wins across all 3 Grand Tours, claiming 8 stage wins in the process. He became only the second rider in history to win the KOM jersey in all 3 of cycling's main stage races after the Spaniard Federico Bahamontes. Described by Colombian cycling specialist Matt Rendell as a slender god with tiny, extruded glass limbs, Herrera was a shy and reserved man who used the bike to express himself. This he did primarily wherever the road went uphill, with the pint-sized Colombian possessing an ability to outclimb his peers in an era that included legends such as Bernard Eno, Laurent Fignon, Greg LeMond, Pedro Delgado, Robert Miller, Sean Kelly, Andy Hampston, and Stephen Roach. Colombian cycling was on a high in 1984 when Martin Ramirez won the Dauphiné Libéré ahead of big hitters Eno and LeMond. Weeks later, Herrera danced clear to win on the legendary Alpe d'Huez in the Tour to become the first Colombian stage winner in the world's biggest bike race. In the words of Rendell in his book Kings of the Mountains, his countrymen felt fated. A Colombian would surely win the Tour, cycling's biggest prize, before the decade was out. Herrera had carried Colombia to the threshold. 3 years later, Herrera won the Vuelta a España to become the first South American to win a Grand Tour. But while Nairo Quintana would become the first to win the Giro in 2014 before emulating his countryman Herrera in the Vuelta 2 years later, it was not until 2019 that a South American would win the Tour. The yellow jersey triumph of 22-year-old Colombian Egan Bernal came 2 months after Ecuador's Richard Carapaz, Quintana's Movistar teammate and Bernal's future colleague at Team Ineos, won the Giro, a race Bernal would have ridden had he not broken a collarbone in training. Quintana was among the favourites for the 2019 Vuelta, but South America could not quite make it a clean sweep of Grand Tours in a single season, with Quintana and fellow Colombian Miguel Angel Lopez finishing 4th and 5th on the podium. It would instead be Slovenia's Primoz Roglic who would take his first Grand Tour. It wasn't to be for Quintana in 2019, but Herrera's historic 1987 Vuelta began well, even before the race had started. Defending champion Alvaro Pino was ruled out of the race because of illness. That made the favourites entering the 42nd edition of that April's Vuelta Irishman Kelly, Frenchman Fignon, and the 1985 Spanish winner Pedro Delgado. Kelly was the form rider, having won Paris-Nice for the sixth time and the Critérium International before finishing runner-up in the Tour of Flanders. His legs responded well to the initial challenge as he came second behind Belgian teammate Jean-Luc Vandenbroucke in the prologue before taking the golden jersey, as it was then, a day later, by winning the opening road stage. Kelly traded the jersey d'oro with Italian Roberto Pagnin a couple of times in the opening week as Herrera tried his best to make up lost time from the individual time trial on stage 3. In his early 20s, Herrera had made his name as a brilliant climber off the back of that win on Alpe d'Huez in 1984. He followed that up with a top 10 finish in the Tour, as well as taking the polka dot jersey and stage wins at Morzine and Saint-Étienne. If Herrera was hardly wet behind the ears despite his tender years, he still wasn't expected to be a factor in the general classification, largely thanks to his rotten riding against the clock. Perhaps he and Quintana have more in common than we originally thought. But in 1987's Stage 6 to Andorra, Herrera and the Colombians rose to the top. He finished third on the stage, but took 22 seconds on Delgado, a minute on Kelly, and even more on Fignon, as five Colombian riders finished in the top 10. Kelly might have moved back into the golden jersey, but Herrera was up to eighth, and the scene was set for the fireworks that would follow. Kelly conceded the race the following day after the Colombians had set an infernal pace ahead of the first of five climbs. The intention was to nullify the threat of a breakaway, which could pose questions to the GC men, while attempting to isolate the favourites by landing blows on their teammates. With 35 riders eliminated that day alone for finishing outside the time limit, the strategy clearly worked. Indeed, the organisers had to extend the limit to keep a further 27 riders in the race. Herrera took time on his rivals as Germany's Raimund Dietzen moved into the lead. Only 49 seconds behind and in fifth, Herrera was also wearing the then red climber's jersey. There followed a lull in proceedings ahead of stage 11 to the misty Lagos de Covadonga in Asturias. On his 26th birthday, Herrera put in an attack for which no one had the answer. The Colombian took a minute and a half on Kelly as he wrestled the golden jersey from Dietzen's shoulders, with Delgado and Fignon finishing more than 3 minutes down. And yet, his rivals still did not consider Herrera a threat, largely thanks to his inability to race against the clock and the perceived weakness of his inexperienced teammates to be able to control the race. What's more, while the Colombians made light work of riding uphill, matters were a little different going the other way. They were very difficult to live with in the mountains, says Sean Kelly, but in the time trials, they would lose a lot of time, and also on the descending, where they were really bad. The Colombians would take a minute on the climb, then, on the other side, going down 10 or 12 kilometres, you could take that time back. A lot of times, they crashed as well. I remember that very clearly. The Café de Colombia guys would go away on the climbs and you'd pick them up on the other side after they'd hit the deck, hard. Faustino Ruperez, Kelly's director sportif at CAS, the team sponsored by the Spanish soft drinks company, was satisfied with the state of play after stage 11. His rider was just 40 seconds down and, in his eyes, the clear favourite because the approaching stages, including the time trial, suited his strengths far better. Kelly might have failed to make any significant inroads on Herrera's lead over the coming days, but he did manage to ride back into gold in the 24km stage 18 time trial in Valladolid. The Irishman ended the day with a 42-second advantage over the Colombian, with just three competitive stages left to run. Although his lead was slender, Kelly was confident of holding on, provided he could get over one small, albeit growing, obstacle. Kelly's problem was indeed getting bigger. He had had a saddle sore that was becoming increasingly painful in the week leading up to the time trial. It was just a lump on the patch where you sit on the saddle, Kelly says. You could get them from an ingrown hair, and when you're on the bike all the time, sweating, it gets infected. It was like a pigeon's egg with a build-up of fluid, and it was getting more irritating and more sore as the days went on. On the evening before the time trial, Kelly had two options: grit his teeth and try and bear it, or have the team doctor perform a little operation. He opted for the latter. The night before the time trial, the doctor decided to lance it to drain it a little bit and put a couple of stitches in, says Kelly. I did the time trial and took the jersey, but it was very painful. That evening, he looked at it again and re-stitched it because the effort on the time trial bike had me moving all the time. Kelly started stage 19 to Avila, but lasted only 20 kilometres. I couldn't bear the pain anymore, he explains. I had to pull out. So, would Kelly have won the 1987 Vuelta were it not for his injury? I had it won, he says. It was 3 days from the finish, and I'd got through all the big stages. There were mountains, but nothing big time left. I think I had a really big chance of winning it, because apart from the saddle sore, I was feeling good. With his nearest rival out of the picture, Herrera moved back into the overall lead after Fignon's stage win in Avila. He kept the Jersey de Oro for the next 2 days before riding into Madrid to become the first South American to win a Grand Tour, by 1 minute and 4 seconds over Dietzen and 3 minutes, 13 seconds over Fignon. A total of 12 Colombians finished the 1987 Vuelta in the top 30, including 6 from Herrera's Café de Colombia team and a further 6 from the Manzana Postobon squad, who won the team classification. It was a sign of just how strong a grip the South Americans had on the peloton in the late 80s. There would, however, be a footnote from Fignon. In his autobiography, We Were Young and Carefree, the late Fignon alleged that Luis Herrera's team manager at Café de Colombia bribed the Frenchman and his Système U team into not attacking the Colombian on the decisive final stage of the race. "The Colombians are offering us money not to attack," Cyril Guimard allegedly said. Fignon added, "We didn't have any intention of attacking because they offered us 30,000 francs, at the time around £3,500, per rider, not to." Of the final stage, when Herrera led Dietzen by just over a minute, Fignon wrote, "There was a hell of a wind blowing and you could sense the fear of the Colombians. In fact, if we had wanted to, we could have taken the initiative and blown them all apart without any problem." In the event, Fignon, despite the agreement, increased the tempo because he was bored and eager to fly home. "So we tried to speed things up. You should have seen Herrera's gestures when we were on the front. Filled with panic, he said we were playing a dirty trick. 'Why are you riding if we've paid you?' he shouted at me. I quickly told him that my intention was just to get out of Spain as fast as possible." Herrera, of course, denied it all. After publication of Fignon's book in 2010, he told the Colombian media, "What he says in his book is total rubbish. We had a good team and we didn't need any outside help to win. In addition, there were 3 teams there with Colombian riders who could have helped me out. If things were as Fignon says, why didn't he say so at the time?" For his part, Kelly is unconvinced about Fignon's allegation, claiming the Frenchman was definitely fighting to win the Vuelta. "I don't know what happened afterwards when I left the race, but I doubt what Fignon said was true," says Kelly. "I'm sure the allegations were just to add a bit of spice to his book. I didn't see anything and never heard anything from my teammates." So, what happened next? The little gardener finished 5th in that year's Tour de France and won the polka dot jersey, but he would slump to 20th place in the defence of his Vuelta crown in 1988 as Kelly put things right with the only Grand Tour victory of his career. Herrera would win the Dauphiné twice and top the mountain standings in the 1989 Giro and 1991 Vuelta, but he would never again reach the same lofty heights as he did in May 1987 in Spain. "It was unbelievable how dominant the guys from Café de Colombia were in the mountains," Kelly recalls. "They were a force that had us thinking, well, these guys are going to be around for a long time. When Lucho won the Vuelta, we thought they'd win the Tour within a couple of years. But then the team folded because of domestic issues, and they disappeared." Compatriot Fabio Parra would finish 3rd in the 1988 Tour, but the huge promise shown by that generation of Colombian riders never fully materialised. The bubble burst as Colombia's political instability led to the rise of the cocaine cartels, and cycling became inextricably linked with the world of drug smuggling, political instability, and domestic violence, all of which is covered by Rendell in Kings of the Mountains. There were always a smattering of Colombians around some of the domestic European teams, but not the domination we expected, Kelly says. "Now, the surprising thing is that you have super climbers like Bernal and Quintana, but also sprinters like Fernando Gaviria, who are among the best in the world. They have everybody now, a really dominant force." As for South America's first Grand Tour winner, he would find himself as a pawn in his nation's civil strife when, in January 2000, he was kidnapped just months after his fellow cyclist Oliverio Rincon suffered the same fate. Visiting his mother in Fusagasuga, Herrera was carried off by 7 masked men from the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia guerrilla group. The message was clear: no one was out of reach, even beloved sporting icons. And yet, those carrying out the crime did not realise who they had abducted. When they did, they made Herrera recount his victories from his windowless cell. As Herrera recalled, the whole time they asked me endless questions about Alpe d'Huez, Covadonga and La Linea, a famed Colombian climb, as though this was a perfectly good time to have a pleasant conversation on the matter. Sitting there talking to them only made me more nervous because they were purposefully trying to intimidate and terrorise me as well. After one day in captivity, he was told he could leave, but because it was nighttime, he decided to stay until the following morning. When members of the guerrilla group demanded more stories, he told them about his Vuelta win in 1987. Following Herrera's release, Jorge Humberto Tenio Porras, president of Colombia's cycling federation, said, "With this act, our country has hit an all-time low. They are now kidnapping our beloved heroes." At the subsequent trial of the two men who led the group of kidnappers, one of them made the following statement. "I'd like to take this opportunity to apologise to Mr. Lucho Herrera for the very uncomfortable position that he was put in as a result of the kidnapping, particularly keeping in mind that he's a great figure of Colombian cycling, one that instead of being harmed should be protected. Thank you." This has been another episode of Recycle by Eurosport, written by Felix Lowe and narrated by me, Graham Wilgos, produced by Pete Burton. You can read more from Felix on Twitter at Saddleblaze, and you can find me at Graham Wilgos. You can follow Eurosport at Eurosport_UK, plus you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Join us for our next episode when we'll be looking back to Jacques Anquetil's champagne-fueled 1963 Vuelta victory, which made him the first rider to win all of cycling's Grand Tours. In the meantime, if you've enjoyed this episode, please do subscribe, share, and rate us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.